Yo, yo, welcome to a post-game edition of the Forum Club. I'm your host, Jovan Buha, Lakers beat writer for The Athletic. And they did it again, folks. The Lakers, not a fourth consecutive overtime, but a fourth consecutive comeback. Although I think it's at five consecutive comebacks at this point. But they defeated the Memphis Grizzlies 115-105 on Friday night. And the story of this game was the comeback nature of... This was the most dramatic of the Lakers' comebacks. I guess technically the Denver game is up there in terms of, you know, the deficit that they had and then when factoring in the quality of the opponent. But the Memphis Grizzlies just came out and punched the Lakers in the mouth. And they took an 11-0 lead. Lakers call timeout. You think they're going to show some sign of life, you know, start to make their comeback. Memphis punches them in the mouth again and takes a 22-2 lead. A 20-point lead in the middle of the first quarter. And by the middle of the first quarter, Lakers had 2 points. They started 1-for-8 shooting. They call a second timeout. And then from that point on, Lakers slowly chip away at the lead, ended up actually taking over the lead in the third at the end of the third quarter. Had a 17-point lead toward the end of the game, about midway through the fourth. So this was just the ultimate flip the switch game. And it feels like we've been saying that every other game at this point, but this really was the starkest example of that, because it was just a 22-2 deficit to start the game, which is just you don't even see that from the worst teams in the league, right? Like it's usually a slow build or maybe, you know, it's a little competitive, and then, you know, towards the end of the first, the better team goes on a run and has like a 10-15, maybe even 20-point lead. But it's rare to see a 20-point lead happen that quickly to start a game. I mean, I wrote about this, you know, after the OKC game, that if the Lakers kept this up, you know, they were going to have their hands full with a tough Memphis team. You know, Memphis is a contender to be in that 7-10 play-in game. They are better than OKC. They are better than Detroit. You know, not quite at the Denver level, but Memphis is feisty, and we already saw what you know they did in the two Memphis games against the Lakers. Like, you know, this is not a easy team by any means. So you know, the fact that the Lakers were able to overcome that deficit and really make that up and play a stellar rest of the game, ended up outscoring the Grizzlies 69-46 in the second half. I think it's a testament to how good this team really is. And, you know, I feel like we've had the same conversation the last four or five games, but, it's tough because it's hard to glean much, right? Because, you know, like these extraordinary efforts, it's basketball. It's not like real basketball because it's just like the Lakers, it's like they're playing, you know, like lackadaisical for a quarter and a half. And then they just go balls to the wall, just, you know, going insane for the next 2.5 quarters. And, you know, that's not sustainable for a full game, right? Few teams play at that level for 48 minutes, but you want to see it more consistently and more of a from start to finish, like, okay, we might have a bad couple possessions. We might have a bad couple of minutes, but we're always going to be trying. We're always going to be giving our best effort. And, you know, for Laker fans, I see why they're so frustrated with some of this, just because, you know, it's so clear that the team, like when they try, they just dominate and obliterate people. And when they don't, you know, they get down 22-2. So I guess it depends how you look at it. If you want to be an optimist, you can say, well, when this team turns on the switch, like they could beat anybody and you know, blow them. Like, you know, the Denver game, again, if you look at the deficit that they had and overcoming that, they were crushing Denver in the minutes that they were winning. And then, you know, similar to this Memphis game. Digging into the box score here, LeBron and AD combined for 63 points. It's the third time they've done that this season. It was the second most points they've had this season. The season high was 65 in Chicago. That was the game that AD had 37, but LeBron also had 28.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So AD ended up playing and clarified post game. I think this is important that it is not his Achilles tendon that is injured. He said it's something above it, and he's not sure what the medical term for that is. Some people on Twitter were throwing suggestions out. So we're not quite sure what Lakers have it listed as right Achilles tendinosis. I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you what that is. I can't tell you what the difference between tendinosis and tendonitis. If you know, please let me know on Twitter or Instagram and reach out and maybe clarify for me, because I don't really know the difference. But AD had a big game, 35 points, 9 rebounds, 16 of 27 shooting, super efficient. It didn't feel like he had 35 points. Like if you were just watch the game and you asked me who had 35 points, LeBron or AD, I would have said LeBron. I was surprised to see Davis's final line, but looked good, right? Like I think a little bit of a slow start from him, and there was I think a few times in the first quarter, first half where he was a bit passive. It was kind of the AD that people have been criticizing, but really got his jumper going. And when his jumper is going, he's just unguardable, right? Like I think, aside from like LeBron and KD and Kawhi, like AD is right there as when his jumper is falling, like he's just unstoppable. There's just nothing you could do as a defense. LeBron had 28, 9, and 8, went on a 7-0 run to close the third, which gave the Lakers the lead and really kind of swung the momentum of the game decidedly. Like from that point on, the Lakers never trailed. And it was a little bit of a game for a little stretch of the fourth, but really the Lakers were in control from that point on. So, LeBron has done this now multiple times. Like he's usually the catalyst in these runs to really, seal the game. And, some 9-15 from him, 9-14 from the free throw line. And I think that's important to note. The Lakers shot 23 of 33 from the free throw line. So only 69.7%. But the 33 free throw attempts ties their season high. And I asked Frank Vogel about that post game, and he just went into, how important free throws are for them and how the coaching staff is talking through the players. Like Wes Matthews drew a three-shot foul on a pump fake and jumped into the guy. And Frank was saying that that's something they've been talking to the players about is, drawing more fouls and kind of, how that's part of their identity. And I thought you saw that tonight where LeBron had 14 attempts, Montrezl Harrell had 10 attempts, right there 24. But, I think that was a big part of why the Lakers were able to dictate the pace the rest of the game and really mount this comeback because, free throws, it slows the game down. You can start to get into a rhythm offensively. It doesn't allow the opponent to get out in transition. And, Memphis had 18 transition points, a lot of that in the first half, 29 points off the Lakers, 18 turnovers, a lot of that in the first half. So, I think the Lakers did a good job of, getting Memphis players in foul trouble. You had Jonas Valanciunas, seven fouls. That'd be a technical. Four fouls. Dylan Brooks, five fouls. Gorgui Dieng, four fouls. And then, a few other players with three. So, good job for the Lakers in being aggressive, attacking the rim, not settling for jumpers. That's what Frank had really, zeroed in on was like, we don't want to settle for jumpers. We want to take threes when we're open, when it's a good shot, but we want to live in the paint. We want to live in the rim. We want to be putting that pressure on defenses. And I thought they did that tonight. So Dennis Schroeder had a weird game. He had four fouls. Dealing with Ja Morant, only 2 points on 1-4 shooting. So that kind of snaps that streak that he had been on of like, 15 plus games. I don't know the exact number, but he'd been playing really well offensively. This was kind of an off game for him. KCP continues to struggle, 1-for-2 shooting in 20 minutes. He's just gone completely MIA offensively and has not been playing well. Off the bench, Kyle Kuzma was the other story of this game. 20 points, 10 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. In 32 minutes, Kuz ended up playing the third most minutes and he deserved it. Kuz has been balling right now. Like Kuz is playing at a very high level, contributing in multiple facets. Like the only blemish you can say on his night was the 2-of-8 3-point shooting. You take that away and he was actually 6-for-6 in terms of 2-point shots. But again, 5 offensive rebounds, a steal, was a plus 21. The second best number on the team. behind plus minus king Alex Caruso, who's a plus 24. But another great game for Kuz, and it just has stepped up and been invaluable over this stretch. Montrezl Harrell only played 16 minutes, did not have a foul, so it wasn't a foul trouble thing, but had 14.7 rebounds, did end up leaving the game early. And I think that's partially why, like, had he not left the game, he had a collision with Kuzma, ended up, I believe that was it. It was in the third quarter, I want to say. I don't remember the exact time. I still think Trez was on pace to playing in the low 20s had that not happened. Post-game, Frank said that Trez passed the concussion test. He was able to return, but they just, you know, didn't end up doing that. Wes Matthews became the 10th guy in the rotation. Actually, really the 9th guy, pushing Talen Horton-Tucker to just 6 minutes. I asked Frank pregame how he was going to approach the rotation, right? Because I you know, that's a question I keep getting asked. It's a question I was interested in, because Lakers started with a 10.5, 11-man rotation to start the year. They cut it down to 9 going into that Boston game. It works. They go 4-0 over the next four games. AD and Alex go down. They now shift to Keefe and Wes back in the rotation, but also in a 9-man rotation. And with Alex and AD returning, I was like, you know, are you going to stick with the original 9? Are you going to go back to 11? Are you going to split the difference and go with 10? Like, how do you view that dynamic? And he said pregame that he was going to go with 10 guys, and that Wes had earned a spot in the 10-man rotation, and that Keefe was the guy on the outside looking in. And it ended up actually being, again, Talen, who was the guy, only played 6 minutes, was a minus 6 in his 6 minutes, and 0 for 2 from the floor. You know, missed a couple shots in the paint. And yeah, so I guess, you know, this kind of reflects more of the dynamic at the beginning of the season. You know, the first like 15 or so games where Talen was the I guess 11th man technically for most of the time, but ended up being the 10th guy tonight. Markieff did not play. And Alex did his thing, you know, 6 assists, 2 steals, you know, was leading the fast breaks. And you know, that's where a lot of those assists came. Lakers on the night had 58 points in the paint, 23 fast break points. So the Lakers are now on a 7-game winning streak. It doesn't feel like it. This has been an ugly, weird 7-game win streak. But a 7-game win streak is a 7-game win streak. And they've padded their home record. Again, they're now 9-4 at home, 12-2 on the road. They're going on the road for a important game, in my opinion, Sunday in Denver. It's important for a variety of reasons. You know, Denver is a team that's been struggling to start the year. So there's an element of, if you can give them another loss, especially at home, you know, that helps you, that pushes them, you know, down the standings. You know, potentially puts them in an unfavorable matchup, you know, against like the Clippers or the Jazz in the first round, or even the Suns. And you know, you want those teams to play each other, beat up on each other, if you're the Lakers. I also think it's important for the MVP race, because right now, you know, the MVP race, depending on how you view it, could be 5 people, 6 people, could be 3 people. And if it's 3 people and you're more of, I want a smaller candidate pool, I think it's LeBron, Nikola Jokic, and Joel Embiid. So for LeBron's MVP candidacy, which I've written about, I've talked about on this podcast, you know, to me, he's the front runner. I just think he has so many things in his favor. Best player in the league, best player on the best team. You know, regardless of record, I think that the Lakers are a better team than the Jazz. I think if you surveyed most of the league, most of the league would agree with that. So I think he's got that. And then the narrative of, you know, a 36-year-old in year 18 winning MVP and putting up MVP caliber numbers. Like, this isn't a charity. You know, he might not have the advanced metrics or the same level of advanced numbers as Jokic and Embiid in certain instances, but you know, he is the leader in RPM heading into tonight. I assume he will retain that. That's ESPN's metric, and he's right there. Like, it's not like LeBron is, I mean, he's top 10 in you know, all those metrics, if not top 5. And it, you know, it's not like he's 30 something and it's just like, oh, just give it to LeBron. Like, no, he's up there. You know, they might be a little bit ahead of him, But his team's ahead of them in the standings. And I think that matters. Like, I think, look, I love analytics. I am pro analytics. I've been pro analytics. So I'm not going to say anything against them. And you know, I use a lot of data. If you read my writing, even if you listen to this podcast, like I will reference different things. So I'm not against that at all. But I also think at the end of the day, like, you know, winning matters and seeding matters, and winning and seeding matters, you know, with the MVP historically, like not always, it's not always the best player on the best team. It's not always the one seed, but it does factor in to some extent. So the fact that Denver is barely hovering above 500, you know, I think that works against Jokic. And the fact that, you know, Philly has a little bit of a worse record in an easier conference, I think that works against Embiid. And LeBron's played every game. You know, Embiid's missed a few games. I know that's not all his fault, but it's just when you look at the minutes, when you look at the games played, like all that stuff matters at the end of the day. And now we are, a third of the way into the season. So it is too early to declare an MVP winner. But I think if LeBron goes up 2-0 on the season series against Nikola Jokic, like when you're having that LeBron, you know, Jokic debate, that's an advantage for LeBron in the head-to-head matchup. So I'm interested in what's going to happen on Sunday. I don't think the Lakers are going to be able to pull off this magic on the road in Denver. You know, Denver is historically a very good home team and you know, a very tough place to play. You know, fans or not, you still got to deal with the altitude. So I think that's one of the exciting matchups. I guess the most exciting matchup of this week, you know, heading into next week, you got Brooklyn, Miami. But yeah, so I think that's the thing to watch this weekend. Game's on Valentine's Day, so for all you with significant others, you're gonna have to you're gonna have to either miss the game or make some earlier plans. I myself had to shift my plans around because of the game on Sunday night. But yeah, I mean, I think that does it for tonight. That does it for tonight's game. No Q&A section tonight, but we will be back with the regular format on Sunday night after the Denver game, which is a pretty big one. So I appreciate you guys listening. If you have not read my mailbag, it just went up today on Friday. So check that out. I go into some of this stuff. I go into AD's health. I go into the rotation. I go into the center position, rim protection, different stuff. Markieff Morris, I got asked the question if he's overrated, and I kind of laid out the case of why I think he's, it depends how you look at him. And I think some people are overrating him. I think some people are underrating him. It really just depends on how you view a certain aspect of his game, which the answer is in the mailbag. But if you have not subscribed to The Athletic, you could do so at theathletic.com. You could do so off of my Twitter feed. If you have not subscribed to this podcast, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts, The Athletic as well. So thank you guys for listening on this Friday night, now Saturday morning. I will talk to you Sunday evening. Enjoy your Valentine's days. Have fun. Be safe. Talk to you then.